This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of October 27th, 2024. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 367. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And on the big deal feature. On October 19th, David Eby's NDP lost its majority. John Rustad's Conservatives lost a chance to immediately govern. Green leader Sonia Firstenau lost a seat in the legislature. But who will ultimately win the October 19th election? Alan Mullen had a front row seat in 2017, the last time BC had a cliffhanger election. Alan Mullen is the former chief of staff to former Speaker Darrell Plekis, and he is my guest on this edition of the podcast. This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. It rained on the October 19th election day in BC, but we do not know which party will reign the legislature or for how long. As of recording this podcast, the NDP led the Conservatives 46 seats to 45. The threshold for a majority is 47 seats. So all eyes are on automatic recounts in Surrey Centre and Juan de Fuca Malahat, where the NDP candidates won narrow victories. October 28th is the Elections BC final count deadline, but it could go into extra innings if there is the need for a judicial recount. In the meantime, the NDP is looking for ways to make a minority government work and return to the legislature later this fall. At an October 22nd news conference, Premier David Eby flattered the Green Party. He also spoke candidly about losing the NDP majority on Election Day.
I reached out to the leader of the Green Party, Sonia Firstenau, immediately after the election to congratulate her on her campaign on electing two MLAs. I thought she ran a principled and values-based campaign that obviously spoke to British Columbians and in many communities across the province. The Greens have advised us that they are not ready yet to engage in those conversations, but we are preparing for what we hope is the likely outcome of the counting without taking anything for granted. We're making sure that we're ready to go. We have a team in place to engage in conversations with MLAs about how we're going to move forward on this, including with the Green Party, and nothing's off the table. We'll have those conversations, and we'll find a way to make the legislature work for British Columbians on the priorities that they sent us back to Victoria to work on. Yeah, I think there was a strong message from many different parts of the province, to me, to our government, that the expectations that British Columbians have are that we do better. And I feel that. I feel like in the last 72 hours, I've learned as much about this job as I have in the previous 2 years. It is a moment for me to take stock about how we ensure that we're delivering for British Columbians on these critical issues, and a clear message that I have heard, and I'm looking forward to putting into practice with my team if the count goes in the direction that we hope it does, and we're able to work with other MLAs to deliver for British Columbians.
On October 23rd, Green leader Sonia Firstenau said she had spoken with Eby, but not with Conservative leader John Rustad. They do not see eye to eye on climate change, for instance. The key question: would Firstenau make a deal to keep the NDP in power? Firstenau was elected leader by her party in September 2020, but less than a week later, then-NDP Premier John Horgan ripped up the confidence and supply agreement with the Greens and called a snap election.
You got burnt by the last agreement you had with the NDP, and then at the tail end of this campaign, his candidates, or people like Rob Fleming, was retweeting things saying, you know, what a crazy idea you had, advising people to vote for the best candidate, and, you know, David Eby was counseling people not to vote for Green candidates in Jeremy's riding, for example, because he would split the vote. Tell me how you could make an agreement with the NDP if that's the case. You've expressed your misgivings about the Conservatives, but obviously there's reasons why you've been burnt by the NDP. Would be more inclined to do a vote-by-vote agreement, or would a CASA still be something you'd entertain given this history?
Yeah, I think it's really important to recognize that my orientation since being elected to office 10 years ago has been, how do I best serve people? how do I best serve? If I were to take everything personally that's ever been said about me, I would be incapacitated. It's not personal. I'm honored to have been able to serve in the way that I've served for 7 years as an MLA. And my focus right now is on how do we have a government that really effectively serves people. Our starting position is our platform, and the meaningful conversations will happen after all the votes are counted. Pretty sure I'm going to be the only person involved in these negotiations that was involved in the negotiations 7 years ago. And I bring 7 years of experience in the legislature of working across party lines, across jurisdictions. And that experience is earned experience. And that's what I will be bringing to the work ahead of us.
My guest on this edition is Alan Mullen, who was chief of staff to Darrell Plekis when Darrell Plekis was the speaker of the legislature from 2017 to 2020. First, want to ask Alan, because he was on the podcast before the election, when Alan was actually considering a run for this election for either the Conservatives or the NDP. Both parties were talking to him. And now that this election is over, I want to ask Alan the first question. Are you glad you didn't run in this election?
Well, thanks for having me back on, Bob. Always good to be with you. I would say I am extremely glad I didn't run. I would be fairly confident if I was to run that I would hopefully be successful, and perhaps we would have some different numbers here to talk about. But the way the election went this time, and the way both parties, to be honest, presented themselves, in the media, on the campaign trail, again, like I said to you before, it's not the kind of politics I want to be involved in. You know, will I run in the future? Very well, maybe. But I am certainly glad, to answer your question, I'm certainly glad I didn't run this time, because it's not the type of sort of party politics that I can get behind. And I think British Columbians have shown that in the result here.
The voters of BC, more than 2 million of them, what were they saying to both the NDP and the Conservatives by not awarding either party a majority?
Well, I think it's a very clear message that people want change, but people don't want the same old change. They sort of were telling the NDP in no uncertain terms that, look, you cannot just run roughshod over the system here and over voters and over British Columbians. But at the same time, they weren't ready to sort of pass the keys to the Premier's office to the Conservatives. To have 5 ministers defeated in their ridings is quite something. And, you know, 2 fairly prominent ministers being the Minister of Education, Rashna Singh, and the Minister of Agriculture being Pam Alexis, to be defeated and defeated handily. That's a pretty clear message, but it's also saying, but we're not just ready to say, well, we don't want the NDP, so we're just going to go Conservative. This is a very clear message from British Columbians to say, you know, you all have to do better. And if that means forcing them to work together, then I think that's a good thing. That's what they should be doing.
In Surrey Serpentine, you had Baltej Singh Dhillon, the first turbaned RCMP officer, historic from way back when, who was running for office. And he was the star candidate of this campaign, making so many appearances with David Eby, especially in Surrey, which they needed to win. He didn't win. Linda Heppner, the former mayor of Surrey, won for the Conservatives, as we saw a blue wave go across the Fraser Valley and into Surrey. What do you think the voters, especially in Surrey, were saying? And is this connected to the Surrey police saga?
Yeah, I think so. I think it absolutely is connected to that. I think that the voters in Surrey are, whether they were pro-RCMP or pro-Surrey police service, you know, the way it was handled by both the city and the government was just disgraceful. A lot of money was spent by the city. A lot of money was spent by the provincial government. And for what? There was no, you know, sort of clear decision made. And I think voters, quite frankly, were fatigued by it. They were fatigued by the Solicitor General, you know, constantly giving the same rhetoric. They were fatigued by a mayor fighting with the provincial government. And I think that had a lot to do with it. But you're right, Bob. Nobody won here. I mean, David Eby had 55 seat majority on an 87 seat legislature, and now you're down to 46 potentially on a 93 seat legislature. That's not a winner. Just because you've got one seat more than sort of the opposition doesn't make it a winner. The Conservatives, I mean, they came on strong, but if you look at sort of the BC United, Liberal Conservative coalition that we've seen in BC here for a long time, well, that party's in tatters. And anybody who ran as an independent, former BC United, was defeated, and they were defeated handily. So I don't see that as a victory either. And the other thing to remember too is a lot of the Conservative momentum, if you will, in my view, is on the back of the federal Conservatives and what, the kind of success that Pierre Poilievre is seeing federally. A lot of people do not know John Rossett, even though he's been around a long time. He's been in the legislature, he's been a cabinet minister, but a lot of British Columbians don't actually know him. They don't know the BC Conservative brand, because all they've ever seen, certainly in recent memory, is that coalition of the BC Liberals and BC Conservatives under the BC Liberal banner. So, to say if we have another election, in short order, which I think we probably will, it's not going to go 4 years, I wouldn't imagine. I wouldn't be surprised if the BC Conservatives don't have as good a showing based on that. And then, of course, you have the BC Greens, who pick up, Adam Olsen's seat. So that's a seat they already had. But then they pick up in Sea to Sky, Vancouver, West Vancouver, Sea to Sky. But then they lose their leader. So now you've got, these two brand new members of the Legislative Assembly who essentially hold the balance of power and they're leaderless. Now, of course, Sonia Furstenau and Adam Olsen and other folks within the Green Party camp can advise them. But at the end of the day, if they're going to sign some sort of a confidence and supply agreement with either the NDP or with the BC Conservatives, at the end of the day, they're going to have to make the decisions. And, I think they're great people, and I think they're going to be good candidates and good MLAs, but they're no Andrew Weaver. And, when they sit down at the table with, the Bob Doers of the world, being, a very important political strategist and advisor to the BC NDP for many years, I don't know if they'll be out of their depth or not. So there is no winner in this election. And I would argue, certainly, there's no winner amongst the voters. Because now we have a legislature that is essentially deadlocked, and we need to get stuff done. We need to get legislation passed. And when you've got a 46-45-2 split in that place, it's very difficult to get anything done, Bob, as you know.
So this could be an interesting negotiation to see if the Greens are bargain that much harder, to see if they get anything, or if there is an agreement at all, because they could always go vote by vote. They could always give kind of a handshake agreement and say, well, we're not going to bring you down, but we'll only go vote by vote because we don't trust you.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very interesting point. And I think what you just said is key. Will there be an agreement at all? The days leading up to the provincial election here, I mean, the NDP had some pretty, sort of fierce attack ads against Sonia Furstenau and against the Greens, suggesting that they were, too tight with the Conservatives, etc. Now, obviously, the Green platform would be, closer to the NDP platform than it would be to the Conservatives, but they don't have to work with anybody. They can simply say no, or like you say, they can go, sort of vote by vote. Obviously, the Westminster tradition would be that the governing party or the former governing party will always get an opportunity to govern. But that means the First Minister, being David Eby, needs to convince the Lieutenant Governor that, he is satisfied that he can govern. It's very difficult to make that, to convince anybody of that if you just say, well, I've got a handshake agreement with the two BC Greens. Generally, an LG, in my experience, won't really go for it unless there's an actual signed agreement, i.e. a confidence supply agreement. Because, there's not much point in sending a party back to the legislature to govern with the full knowledge that there's a good possibility that on the very first confidence vote, being the budget, government could fall. So you know, unless the Greens want to come to the table and actually sign some sort, it doesn't have to be, you know, the same as 2017, but some sort of a confidence and supply agreement with the NDP, I think we'll be heading back to the polls sooner rather than later. Now, if they did sit down with them, you know, I would be shocked if they didn't ask for at least one cabinet position. I mean, why wouldn't they? You know, you hold the balance of power, government essentially falls. I mean, John Rustad and the BC Conservatives have made it abundantly clear since the results that every chance they get, they'll move heaven and earth to bring down the government. So, you know, if you're David Eby and you're the BC NDP, you're saying, look, whatever we need to do to get these two Greens on board, we will do it because we need to, you know, retain power. We need to form government, and we need to be able to, you know, pass legislation. So if I'm in the BC Green camp, whether it's Sonia Firstone or whoever the advisors are, I'd be saying, well, I want at least a cabinet spot. And furthermore, here's the stuff that's important to us, and that needs to be first. Now, there has been rumblings that you know, the Greens would ask for a change in the voting system to proportional representation as opposed to first past the post that we have now. That is a non-starter. So again, you know, I just hope they've got the right people advising them, because if that's what they go in for, and that's sort of like the hill they want to die on, then it'll be an election because there is no way. We've had three referendums here in BC. Excuse me. The voters have said resoundingly they do not want to change the voting system. It would favor the Greens. You know, if we had a proportional representation, they would have had 7 or 8, maybe even 9 seats this time around instead of 2. So I can see them asking for that. They're not going to get it. So they need to be smart in their, you know, sort of their requests or their demands, because at the end of the day, you know, the NDP will only agree to so much, and then it'll just be pull the trigger, let's go back to the polls. So it's a very interesting time though, and it's one that I lived through an experience in 2017 when, you know, Andrew Weaver and John Horgan sat in a room for many, many, many hours and many days coming up with the confidence supply agreement, which actually worked quite well until it was essentially ripped up by John Horgan, as you say. But a lot of interesting times in BC politics ahead. I mean, they don't call us the Wild Wild West for nothing, Bob, as you know.
Rewind back to those days of May and June 2017 and eventually into September 2017 when Darrell Pluckis became the speaker. What stands out in your mind then that will probably repeat this time? What should people look for?
Well, I think it's even more sort of dicey this time than it was then, because back then, you'll recall, obviously Darrell Pluckis was elected as a BC Liberal, and then essentially decided to become the speaker. The BC Liberals kicked him out of the party. But the point I'm making is that that meant they had one less seat. And I remember, like, all through, you know, from 2017 to 2020, the big thing was always, even though they had the confidence of supply agreement, and even though they had those three Greens on board with them, like, it was so important that every single member was there for every vote and for every session, and nobody could be sick. And I mean, I remember when, you know, members would show up and you could just tell them they were like death warmed over. They were so sick, you know, for one reason or another, and they were there. Because you couldn't miss a day, you couldn't miss a vote, you couldn't miss, you know, a minute of the session, you know, for fear that, you know, something would go sideways and the opposition would bring government down. This is even more dicey. I mean, if you look at the numbers, 46, 45, okay, so let's say the NDP is afforded the opportunity to form government, they need to give up a speaker. So now it's 45, 45 with two Greens. And let's say, for the sake of argument, the Greens go with the NDP. Well, you don't have to do math very well to figure out that one or two members aren't there and that government falls. You can call it a, you know, a confidence vote at any time. And then obviously there are certain votes, anything to do with finance, anything to do with the budget, that's an automatic confidence vote. But it is so razor thin, like it could not be closer. You know, when you give up that speaker, it's 45-45, you've got those two Greens, you know, my thing is you better have a very, very good agreement with the Greens if you think they're, you know, it's going to work and you're going to actually form government. And I'm not sure. It's going to be very interesting to see what the lieutenant governor decides, because, you know, the premier or the premier-elect can make his case all day long, but if the numbers don't work, and if it's obvious to the lieutenant governor that it's just too dicey, then she has an obligation to call an election. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see. But I mean, you know, when I was there at the BC legislature, I mean, both parties were basically sitting on the edge of their seats for 3 years, you know, based on the numbers. And then, of course, there was the spending scandal, and you know, the opposition tried to have the speaker removed, and you know, there was more drama with that, more so because of the numbers than anything else. So all it takes is somebody to, you know, not be there, you know, for one reason or another, which happens, life happens, and they miss a day or a week or a month, and you know, whichever party is missing that member is in serious trouble. So I think we're in for quite the roller coaster ride. But I don't think we're going to be, you know, away from the polls too long here. I just don't think the numbers can work. I really don't.
So there will be an incentive for both parties, both main parties, to find a way to make this work longer than a year, because 2025 is a federal election year. The BC NDP, of course, is the provincial wing of a federal party, the Conservative Party of BC, not legally connected to the federal Conservative Party under Pierre Poilievre, but still they share many of the same volunteers, donors. They will, of course, want the federal Conservative Party under Poilievre to succeed. So they don't want to get in the way of that. One of the players from 2017, who was the premier until John Horgan was sworn in, was Christy Clark. She has resurfaced. She is hoping to position herself as the front runner to replace Justin Trudeau as leader of the Liberal Party and maybe even prime minister. That's been a long time dream of hers, going back to the 90s. What are your thoughts on this, that Christy Clark, who has been out of politics since the summer of 2017, she's been on corporate boards, she's been working at a law firm, she wants to get back in the game and save the Liberal Party of Canada?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I mean, I've always known Christy Clark's been a, you know, sort of a lifelong federal liberal. But I mean, in classic sort of Christy form, she doesn't want to just come in and run for, you know, member of parliament. She wants to come in and run for the prime minister. You know, she wants to walk in and take the reins. Well, I mean, Justin Trudeau has said very clearly he's not ready to step down. He's no intention of stepping down. Now, whether that is true or not, that remains to be seen. I don't think there's a whole lot of love, if I'm being honest, for Christie, but that's only in British Columbia. That's only where she served as premier. Christie is very polished. She's an accomplished politician. She's very well spoken. I think she would definitely resonate with, you know, folks in Atlantic Canada, in other parts of the country where the Liberals have, you know, historically had success. You know, very few federal parties rely on BC to sway an election one way or the other, in very rare cases, perhaps. But I'm not surprised that she's considering doing that. I'm not sure why she would do it at this point. I mean, the Liberal Party is failing at epic proportions at the moment, and maybe she feels she can, you know, step in and be the savior. But I'm not sure that. In my view, I mean, I've known Christy for a long time, and obviously British Columbians know her as well. I'm not sure she's the answer to replace Justin Trudeau with, you know, whatever issues he would leave with. But again, it will be up to, you know, the card-carrying members of the federal Liberals, and ultimately it would be up to voters. I do know she's been taking French lessons, which you need to if you want to be a leader of a federal party. How that's going, I don't know. But again, it would be interesting. But you know, I mean, at times, sometimes I look at folks, and I'm not necessarily saying about Chrissy, but just in general, I look at some politicians and I think to myself, why not just leave it? You know, you've had your day in the sun. You did a lot of great things, some not so great things, but that's politics, and that's the way it goes. You know, why would you want to go back in? Why would you want to, especially at that level? So I'm not sure there would be a whole lot of success there, Bob, if I'm being honest, but I do know that it's a desire of hers, and I think that the folks around her are heavily advising her to go in that direction. So it remains to be seen, but I think there's a lot of folks across the country within the federal Liberals that are eyeing that job. She wouldn't be the only one. I'm not even sure she'd be a front runner. So there's folks who have been ministers at the federal level. There's folks who have been, elected MPs for the federal Liberals for many years that I think would probably be better suited or better situated at this point. I mean, usually you would have to, have some experience in the House before you actually go for the leadership. But it's that's the system we have, and if she wishes to run for that, all the best to her. But I'm just not sure that it would be all that successful.
She will face some tough questions once the Eastern Canadian media catch up on their history lessons.
And it'll be very interesting too, Bob, I think, when you see some of her extremely close BC Liberal ministers, i.e. Mike DeYoung or Rich Coleman or these kinds of folks who are contemplating and planning running for the federal Conservatives. It would be an interesting day in the House when, if you had Christy Clark on the Liberal side and you had Mike DeYoung on the opposing side, I think it would be a very, very interesting exchange. Given their history in a number of the areas that you just mentioned. So lots to see here in BC, but also lots to come at the federal level too, which is it's always exciting. It's never a dull moment, as we always know.
Ellen Mellon, former chief of staff to former speaker of the BC legislature, Darrell Plekis, joining me on the podcast, talking about the aftermath of the October 19th British Columbia election and looking forward to see where this all goes next. Thanks again.
Thanks, Bob.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the Taiwan news, President says Taiwan willing to work with China on climate change. Lai Ching-te said the government's strategy is to promote, quote, second energy transition, end quote, and increase energy resilience. The government will promote new energy storage technologies, innovative industries, strengthening adaptation, and the goal of net zero by 2050. In ABC News Australia, China was called to address human rights abuses. It responded by accusing Australia of hate crimes. China's foreign ministry spokesperson says Australia is, quote, plagued by systemic racism and hate crimes, has severely violated the rights of refugees and immigrants, end quote. It comes after Australia's ambassador to the United Nations called on China to address human rights abuses in Xinjiang and Tibet. In Hong Kong Free Press, China and India agree to work towards improving ties as leaders Xi and Modi meet for first formal talks in 5 years. Chinese President Xi Jinping and Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi met on the sidelines of a BRICS summit in Russia. Russia's Putin hosted leaders of the BRICS alliance, a competitor to the West's G7, in Kazan. Also included were leaders from Brazil, South Africa, and Iran. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. In Willamette Week, Thorns General Manager Karina LeBlanc leaves behind more questions than answers. Portland looks far from a team that can make a meaningful run at a fourth championship this year. LeBlanc will transition into a role as the Executive Vice President of Strategic Growth Development for Raj Sports at the conclusion of the 2024 season. The role will span across both the Thorns and Portland's new WNBA team. Prior to joining the Thorns, Canadian LeBlanc worked for CONCACAF. She was hired in 2022 after previous ownership covered up an abuse scandal. In Crosscut, 70% of Washington students have access to free school lunches. Free school lunches increased by 32% in the 2024-2025 school year, according to the Office of the Superintendent of Public Instruction. That means at least 70%, or 775,000 of Washington's 1.1 million students, have access to free school lunches. And in the Breaker.News, read these stories. Meet the new boss, same as an old boss, The day after BC's election, a pro-Beijing group chose new leadership in Richmond. And, party line, almost 300 emergency votes by phone on BC Election Day. And introducing bobmackin.substack.com. Visit me there, too. That's Cascadia calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate. Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the memory of Dr. Jack Taunton, who died last week. The late sports medicine pioneer's legacy included helping create the Vancouver Marathon and the Vancouver Sun Run. In 2010, Taunton was the top doc for the Vancouver 2010 Winter Olympics. He was inducted to the BC Sports Hall of Fame in 2014 and named to the Order of Canada in 2024. My condolences to his family. And you can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar? Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of October 27th, 2024. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 27th of October in 1997, the Dow Jones Index crashes due to the Asian financial crisis? Some called it the Asian economic flu. Almost a month later, Asia-Pacific leaders met in Vancouver for the annual APEC summit. Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. And introducing bobmackin.substack.com. Visit me there, too. Sign up for the free email newsletter and get updates to your inbox, or follow The Breaker News as news happens on X, formerly Twitter. And you can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.